I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic present Right on the Money, the $1,000 Challenge.
And it's that time. We're going to give away $1,000.
I love this day.
Zions Bank. We're going to stick around to the end of the segment, though. Our friends, family listening. Family's not eligible to win. Oh. Got to listen closely for your chance to win the $1,000 Challenge. Of course, always brought to you by Zions Bank.
Yeah, they haven't forgotten who keeps them in business. We love Zions Bank because, again, the $1,000 Challenge, if you're not a part of it, if you haven't joined us, text CHALLENGE to 57500. The $1,000 Challenge is very simple. We want you to save $1,000 by the end of the year, $1,000 in an emergency fund that if something happens and pops up, it doesn't go on the credit card, but it gets paid for in cash.
I'm rebuilding. I got wiped out by that air conditioning issue incident that happened about a month ago. $650 gone. I'm back to like $120 now.
Debbie, we're rebuilding. Stop trying to make this your thing.
You're on your own, dude.
My money too.
You're on your own. Hey, until we get to the question at the end of this segment, when we ask you to call in to win, I want to talk to KSL's investigative producer, my former investigative producer, Mark Stevens. We actually went to dinner last night, and he was telling me this story about how he earned $6,000 in 6 months thanks to a side hustle that he'd picked up. And I knew you were doing this when I was we were working together side by side on the I-team. And I thought, this is brilliant. And the reason it was so brilliant, Mark, is because you were specifically allocating any of the money that you brought in from charging e-scooters to debt elimination. Dave, he specifically allocated every amount, every paycheck he got to paying off a bill.
And Mark, what I love about this is my challenge. When I took the $1,000 challenge, I wasn't taking any money. I'm not saving any money from my KSL paycheck. It has to be side hustle money. So I'm donating plasma.
I don't like needles.
I'm terrified
exactly.
of needles. I also don't like people.
I don't
like to interact with people.
That's a joke.
How does the e-scooter thing work, Mark?
Oh, so it was when all those e-scooters started popping around and we saw a bunch of news stories and I thought, huh, that seems kind of fun maybe. And so I signed up and they hired me, I guess. I mean, I had to watch a YouTube video and
how to do it properly.
Yes, okay. There were techniques that I didn't follow. Which is okay. I quit there now, so we're good. But yeah, at night, I'd log onto my phone, open the app, and it would be in, I worked for Lime, so their pun was everything based on like squeezing lime. So I would go into juicer mode.
Okay.
And you'd pull up a map and it would just pop up, you know, these scooters with little flags and you'd see them all over the city. And so then for the longest time, I was just driving around at night for about an hour, hour and a half, grabbing as many as I had chargers for.
So what was the first bill that you paid off with the first paycheck that you got from charging e-scooters?
A $400 flight to visit my dying grandmother.
That you had put on a credit card?
I had put it on a credit card, and because it was an unanticipated expense. It was, I need to go see her now. And I didn't have that kind of room in my standard TV paycheck because I had rent and groceries and all that other stuff to pay. And so that's when I was sitting there going, okay, well, I make, let's see, at the time I had 8 chargers. So at $4 a scooter, do the math. And so I was just dividing that into how many nights of scooters. And then it just kind of started building up from there without me really realizing it. But that was my strategy. Every time I had a big chunk on a credit card or whatever, I would go, okay, if I'm going to buy this, how many nights of scooters is that going to take to pay off before the bills due?
I love this. I mean, this is exactly what my philosophy is. All right, if the side hustle money is extra work, then what's it going to go to? And when you have a plan, and that's what I love, is you had a plan. Oh, this money goes here. Because if you just let it get sucked into the family budget or the personal budget, then all of a sudden it just disappears.
I want to hear so much more about how this works, because I think there's a lot of people in our audience, Mark, who really are looking for a side hustle that has some flexibility. You were sticking 8 scooters, I believe it was, in your Dodge Dart.
I have a Dodge Dart.
Does not
I don't
have a truck.
Pickup truck.
And you were getting worried. And again, if you're just joining us, Mark Stevens was my investigative producer. We're friends. We were out to dinner last night, and he was telling me about this awesome 6K he made in 6 months charging e-scooters as a side hustle to pay off debt. You had to go out and buy a clunker.
Yeah, I was tired of beating up my car. And I wanted, and the thing is, the way it worked is, as you did more and qualified, they would allow you to get more chargers. Well, I was maxing out. I could not fit any more than 8 in the car. And I didn't want to make multiple trips, because then you're sitting there trying to balance your time. So I was looking for a cheap car and wound up buying a 97 Mercury Grand Marquis that I could shove a lot more. I doubled my output. I could shove 16 scooters in that car.
And how many hours did you have to charge those scooters? And how many could you could just do 8? That was it? Or is there a limit?
Well, at that point, I did 16. And I was qualified up to 25. And I know that there's people who do more, because I would, you're competing out there. You'd see other juicers who are out there charging. You know, I just had my beat-up car, but I would see people with trucks and trailers. And, I mean, they would stack, and they had all kinds of them, way more than I ever wanted to deal with.
And it was $4 per charge.
$4 right? a scooter, typically.
I did a little quick math. You made $6,000. That's 1,500 scooters. I mean, that's a substantial amount.
That's insane. And now some of that, there were some times I did get more than $4.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, that was really rare. Like, I do remember I got a $7 scooter once.
There you go. That one charge.
And so how long would it take you in the morning? What time would you have to get up in the morning to get them back out there?
They have to be out by 7, otherwise they cut your earnings in half, which happened to me once on accident and never again.
Did you sleep through an alarm?
No. For whatever reason, and I didn't understand the app properly, so I wasn't reserving them, and I had gotten up too late, so everybody was out trying to get them dumped off. And I was stuck having to do 1 or 2 at a time when I've got 16, and I just couldn't make 7 o'clock in time.
So could you then get paid daily once you...
They paid you... So at 7 a.m. was the pay cutoff, and at 7:10 I'd get a text saying, you know, we just paid you.
I love it. I love that it wasn't a huge time commitment as well. Overall, what would you spend in a day?
An hour and a half at night on a good night. Uh-huh. And sometimes even just as quick as an hour, and then an hour in the morning.
But to make earn $6,000 in 6 months charging e-scooters, and I know because we work together, you were having to do this pretty much every night and weekends, right?
I would do 6-7 nights a week. I mean, typically 6.
Why this over Lyft or Uber, besides that you hate people?
I didn't want to deal with driving people. I didn't want to deal with any messes that might happen. I didn't want any of the liability. You have to buy
no
extra
customer
insurance.
Service issues.
I didn't. This was totally on me. I could drive around. To some degree, you're kind of competing against other juicers, so you kind of are a little bit of a maniac. But it was just me being a maniac.
Yeah.
And if I wanted to take the night off, and there's plenty of times I did, I just did. It didn't matter.
Well, and when you look at the results, when you were doing 16 scooters at $4 a pop, it takes you 2 or 3 hours. That's $20, $30 an hour. That's fantastic for a side job. And you can choose not to do it 1 week if you're on family vacation. You don't need to ask for any time off, correct? You
correct.
Just don't
just
do it.
Don't do it. Didn't matter.
You need that flexibility because you had a job that we just never knew when we were going to be back from interview.
Of course.
Or if we had a live story airing that night at 10, you and I were working till 9 o'clock at night to get it on the air, sometimes until 10 at night to get it on the make
or,
that 10,
I mean,
15 time
if,
slot.
If my friends wanted to do something, I was like, yeah, I've got the money, you know, banked. You know, I can take the night off. Not a big deal. And they're like, you sure? Oh, yeah.
Did you feel like it gave you financial freedom?
Yes. Because I always had this kind of flexibility where I knew that my paychecks were dedicated to, you know, to me, the real stuff. And then I had the scooter money for, you know, extras that I was buying or needed to pay off.
It is just about time to ask the $1,000 challenge question. But before I do, Mark, I want to wish you best of luck. I know you're leaving KSL Television to head to another market to be an investigative reporter. It has been an honor, my friend, to work with you. And we've cranked out some amazing work while you were here and we were a team together. And I'm going to miss you.
Thanks.
It's been a lot of fun working with you.
It's time, the $1,000 challenge.
So here's the question. You ready for it? What was the first thing KSL's investigative producer, Mark Stevens, paid off with his side hustle of charging e-scooters.
We'll take caller number 5, 801-575-TALK. The fifth caller, 801-575-TALK. What was his side hustle, and what did he pay off? What did he pay off with that side hustle? So give us a call. We'll give away that $1,000. Excited to do it.
I'm so excited to take your calls. 801-575-TALK. And we're also going to talk about this. The one question you should always ask your coworkers that will give you a huge increase in pay. It worked. I've got proof it worked. I'm going to tell you that one question next.
You're right on the money with Dave and Dujanovic.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dave and Dujanovic present Right on the Money, the $1,000 Challenge.
We have a winner, 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 winner.
We love it. Congratulations.
Jake in Woods Cross, congratulations. You win the $1,000 today thanks to Zions Bank. You talked to him, Dave, didn't you?
Oh, this is the first time I've ever won anything on the radio. Awesome. You guys are awesome. I love KSL Radio. I love listening to you guys. Oh, man.
Well, we're happy for you, Jake. Congratulations.
You get extra brownie points for saying you love listening to me.
And me. No. Listen, it was great. I asked him. I'm like, hey, you ever done a little side hustling? He's like, yeah, I'm a handyman. I do a lot of stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah.
That's an awesome side hustle.
That's something that I am very passionate about, side hustle, because my KSL paycheck is spent, like, down to the nickel, it seems, every 2 weeks. And the side hustle money is a huge help for me and my family. I like just a little extra spending cash, a little disposable income. Mm-hmm. So a side hustle, great way to do it.
So we always like to thank our friends over at Zions Bank. The $1,000 Challenge always brought to you by them. Zions Bank, so grateful. Of course, Zions Bank motto is, we haven't forgotten who keeps us in business. And we haven't forgotten that you have helped a lot of Utah families. To our friends over there at Zions Bank, I mean, what are we up to now? I mean, at least I think we've every Thursday we're giving this money away. There's been a couple of exceptions when you and I have been out of town or there's a holiday, but we're giving away $1,000 every Thursday at 11:20, thanks to Zions Bank, because we're on a mission. We are on a mission to help people build an emergency fund. I got sick and tired of putting things on a credit card. We got sick and tired of reading that 60% of Americans don't have $1,000 stashed away. And so here we're doing something about it.
Yeah, and it's difficult. It's not easy to do. Saving $1,000, sometimes you can just tighten the belt. Sometimes you have to get an extra job. But I think it's a worthy cause, Debbie, both you and I. Oddly enough, about a week apart, totally lost every single penny of the money we had saved. You for an air conditioning unit, and me for yours was just a repair, and I had a fuel pump go out on my dumb smart car. So now we're at zero. We're right there with you, but we're grateful that we had the money there to pay for this unexpected expense.
Before I came into work today, I was looking through my news feeds and I saw this headline, and then I read into the story and I thought, this is amazing. I've got to share it with Dave and our listeners. There's one simple question that helped a woman pay off $200,000 of student loan debt. And she lives in Boston, but this is certainly can affect anybody here in Utah.
$200,000
in student loan debt. But even if it's $50,000. So let's talk about what she did. She asked, once she got a job, after she started feeling a little comfortable in that job, she started asking her coworkers what she calls the over-under question. And we probably all asked it at some point. But here's what she would do, Dave. She would actually turn to people in her own field and ask them whether they were earning over or under a certain amount, which you could use your own salary. So I could turn to you and say, okay, just give me a range. Do you make under or over fill in the blank?
Yeah.
And she would, they would actually answer that question. And using that bit of information to then turn around and start looking for lots of jobs, she was able to set her bar higher and not feel like she was way out of the range. And she was able to land job after job and move up in the pay scale to the point where she actually increased her salary in a very short amount of time by 40% additional, a higher salary a year, 40% increase a year.
Oh boy, it's a workaround. There's no question. A lot of companies have a policy that prevents you from asking a coworker what their salary is, because it does not benefit the company at all for you to know what the other people are making, because if you're underpaid, then you get a raise, and there's just not a lot of benefit for it. So that's why they put it in place. I've always found this to be the hardest thing in business and in working, to know what you're worth. They're like, oh, you got to know what you're worth. Well, how am I going to figure this out? Because eventually you start doing this over under and start narrowing it more and more. Because if you say, hey, are you making more than $50,000 and less than $150,000? Yeah, that's fine for the first person. They'll answer that. But eventually you're going to say, do you make over or under $77,000?
We're talking about the story that I read this morning, and I was just fascinated by the fact that this woman was able to pay $200,000 off in her student loan debt. She didn't have any help from her family doing this. She did it all on her own, and she said the way she did it is by asking the over-under question. And it wasn't a specific number that she was after from her coworkers. It was a range. Do you make over or under this amount? And she found out by asking this question that she was making about $20,000 a year less than other people in her field. And so she just set out and started interviewing like crazy and was able to set her bar with the knowledge about what others were making, keep it realistic, but she was able to get the pay raises that she needed to apply to her student loan debt, and she paid off that $200,000. I wondered if it was time to stop keeping salaries a secret. You and I have talked about this on the show. I said, wouldn't that eliminate all kinds of problems in the workplace if employers had to publish our salaries? I think it would. And I think at the time when we talked about this last time, you said, no, it would create all kinds of issues.
Big time.
But I would at least know what everybody was making. So I, you know, hey, you explained to me why I'm not worth as much as Dave Moriega.
Well, for example, or vice versa, right?
Right.
We just don't know. The problem that I see is all of a sudden when you start publishing everybody's salaries, if I knew what you made, you knew what I made, and all of a sudden there was this open discussion, well, then you have what we have with the labor unions, with the teachers, where it's you only get paid if you have this much experience, this much education. There's the matrix right there. If you've taken this much education or completed this much education, this many years, you know exactly what you're going to make. But not all teachers are created equal. There are teachers that have 20 years of experience and a PhD that are not nearly as effective as the teacher that's straight out of college and has 2 years of education or 2 years of experience. Just because you have education and experience doesn't mean that you're better. There's lots of people.
And there's actually been a TED Talk that's addressed this question that I'm asking. Is it time to stop keeping salaries across the board secret?
How much do you get paid? Don't answer that out loud. But put a number in your head. Now, how much do you think the person sitting next to you gets paid? Again, don't answer out loud. At work, how much do you think the person sitting in the cubicle or the desk next to you gets paid? Do you know? Should you know? Notice, it's a little uncomfortable for me to even ask you those questions. But admit it, you kind of want to know.
I don't get at all uncomfortable when somebody asks me. And here's what I do. I don't come out directly and tell them exactly the amount. But if you ask me a question, Dave, one wink means you're within the area code.
Okay.
If my eyeballs get really big after you throw out a salary number, you're definitely in the ballpark.
Debbie, 10 million.
How big are my eyes?
They're really small. They're really small.
Hey,
basically closed, shut, eyes wide.
Coming up next, we're coming off giving away $1,000 again. Thanks a lot, Zions Bank. We appreciate it. We're super happy for Jake and Woods Cross. Thank you for listening, Jake. Coming up, there are apps that help teach your kids about money, and there's a local event that's doing the same. Our next guest, KSL Television's producer Sloan Schreg, is in the house. He's got all the info for us on where to get that info for our kids.
Right on the Money with Dave and Dujanovic.
Dave and Dujanovic present Right on the Money, the $1,000 Challenge.
All right, you know, we just gave away $1,000 to Jake and Woods Cross. So happy for him. And wanted to also have KSL's consumer reporter, consumer producer in to talk about cash and kids and how kids can save and what we can do as parents to teach our kids.
Yeah, this is something that is a common conversation in the Noriega household. In fact, sometimes my kids offer to pay for things and I'm a little embarrassed. Like we were buying sodas and my daughter starts pulling out her wallet. I'm like, honey, I got this. I will buy you a soda.
Sweet.
But it's one of those things where they're just kind of ingrained in their brain that you pay for your own stuff. And sure, has it gone too far sometimes? But I still like the idea that our kids are like, oh, I'll pay for that.
Sloan Schreg attended a kids' cash fair. So what did you learn?
Lots of things, Debbie. I think the most important thing that I learned is that it's just never too early to teach your kids about money. There's a Cambridge study out of the UK saying that kids kind of form their money habits at age 7. And so when I was there, I saw kids as young as 3, you know, learning how to tell the difference between nickels and dimes and quarters. And they had it set up so they can actually the spending options were much more than the earning options. So they were forced to make some choices between what they wanted and what they needed.
Now, you did an interview with Troy Rasmussen.
Mm-hmm. Tony.
Tony, excuse me, Rasmussen of Mountain America Credit Union. Let's get his take on this.
And by the age of 7 or 8, many of our financial habits can actually be pretty well established. So the sooner we start, the better.
7 or 8?
Yeah.
Financial habits established. That's shocking to me. I'd never heard that statistic
before. No, and there's actually other studies. There's a study out of Purdue that says kids can grasp basic money concepts as early as 3 and 4. I mean, it's amazing how much they can learn at such an early age.
Well, I can tell you, when I was 13 years old, I was mowing a ton of lawns. And this is 1990. I earned $1,000 in the summer. That's a ton of money to a 13-year-old. And my mom told me, listen, you earned it. You worked hard for it. You spend it however you want. And I spent every cent of that $1,000.
You blew it.
And I really think I look back on it and I think some of my spendiness kind of goes back to that 13-year-old Dave where if you want something, you just buy it. You had the money, so saving it and looking toward the future was not top of my list. And I can totally believe that at a very young age, it can set the foundation for your adulthood.
Absolutely. And Tony stressed to me that the importance that we teach him as young as 7, that the difference between wants and needs, and do that kind of by showing them through examples. Give an example of a time where you had to sacrifice a want that you really wanted to buy in order to pay for a need. Maybe you wanted that HDTV, couldn't get it because you had to pay the power bill. Show them, explain that to them, and they kind of grasp that concept a lot easier.
Okay, let's hear from Tony again, and then let's get Sloan's input on this.
Setting that tone in the home can be one of the most important things, and then actually having the schools and the educational system be a support for that. But no one's going to teach your children about the things that are valuable like the parents.
Wow, because I think so often we count on the schools to do it.
Yeah, kids, they soak in this stuff. They're seeing, they're observing. They're learning from you whether you want them to or not. And so you need to set that example. And even if you have had a checkered past with money, it's not too late for you to learn.
Well, and sometimes that is the best lesson for the kids. I got scammed out of $80 trying to go to a concert yesterday or 2 days ago. And yes, Debbie, I still have not reported this. But anyway, it was a great teaching opportunity for my son who was with me. And I explained to him, yeah, Dad did a stupid thing.
Yeah, they're watching you. They know when you're throwing down plastic to pay for stuff, and they get that concept. And so you need to kind of explain to them, you know, your failures, you know, because they can learn a lot by that. You know, you bought the $80 ticket scam, you know, and your son will remember that lesson for probably the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Kids today have access to apps, as you know, Sloan, as mm-hmm. you know, we all know. But I want to hear about some of the savings apps that you've investigated, and maybe we can pass on some tips about those to our listeners so they can help their kids use them.
Yeah, gamifying money can help them kind of grasp that lesson. You don't have to be scared to learn about money.
Did you say gamifying?
Gamifying, yeah, I know.
I love it, Sloan.
I feel so modern. But one of the apps that Kiplinger recommended was Saving Spree. And this is for iOS, but kids can they make imaginary money and they can make decisions, and they can lose money by making bad decisions. Another good one that I played last night was called Renegade Buggies. It's all about shopping, and you learn how to buy in bulk, you learn how to buy coupons, find the best deal. You look at you know, the unit pricing, lots of different tips to save money. And another good one is Bankaroo, and that's for iOS and Android. And this is actually came about from the 11-year-old. What it is, it's a virtual bank, and kids can learn how to bank that money, save that money. They'll learn how to set up a budget, and they'll learn how to make those decisions again between wants and needs.
At 14, that is when we started our kids with their own debit card, their own account, their own savings account, and they have had a ball following the money that they save. They're like, Look at all that. It's growing. This feels great.
It's so different than how I grew up when I knew I had a savings account, but I wasn't allowed to know how little was in it. It turns out I thought I had all kinds of money and it was like $100 in it, which at the time was a lot of money. But seriously, looking back, $100 didn't go very far. But my parents really shielded me from this information. And it's a whole different way of life now in homes across America and across Utah.
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of us, myself included, have made some embarrassing money mistakes. And so maybe we're reticent to talk to our kids about money because we don't feel we're confident enough to do it. But as Tony suggested, I mean, you have to kind of build that confidence. You have to turn things around now for yourself. And it's never too late to do that. And he recommended, and this is a good idea, is to go to your credit union or to your bank because they have free education tools where you and your child can learn money lessons, and they're free.
They love free.
Yeah.
They want you to be financially stable.
Absolutely.
There's a vested interest.
Oh, absolutely.
When you borrow money, they want you to be able to pay that back regularly and in full.
Yeah.
Sloan, I know you're a regular listener of the show. You have to be because you're my friend. We're going to go around the room here real quick in the 30 seconds we have left. Biggest money mistake you ever made?
I bought a car off of KSL a website, and the car turned out to have no mechanic worthiness. I didn't ask a mechanic to look at the car, so I paid $2,300 for the car. Then I had to pay $1,900 more to get it to work.
Oh, man. That's...
And that was
I lived
huge,
that with you.
Yeah.
I lived that with you, my
you,
friend.
You remember my tears and my crying when I know. You know, slept in the desk
I
and
think
cried?
At one point, I offered you. I did. I took you back and forth to work for a
you
while.
You did.
While,
yeah.
while we worked this issue out. Mine was a car issue, too. In the beginning, when I finally started making a little bit of money, I got sick of one car, and I would trade it in and buy another. And buy, you know what you end up? Upside down.
Yeah.
A horrible financial decision there. And kind of got stuck with a car in the end that I didn't want anymore and I couldn't sell.
Yeah, cars are a common problem. I can't get past my $80 I lost on a scam when I knew it. When I turned to my wife and said, honey, this is totally a scam. Boom, sent. Terrible. But I think part of it, Sloan, and you said it, being able to talk about those mistakes so that hopefully someone else can learn from our terrible decisions. Thanks for joining us. We're out of here. As usual, Debbie and I leave friends.
Live breaking news now on the mobile app for KSL News Radio. Listen at home or anywhere you go. Brought to you by Any Hour Services, KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City, KSL News Radio. This is Utah's news station.
Dave and Dejanovic present Right on the Money, the $1,000 Challenge.
All right, you know, we just gave away $1,000 to Jake in Woods Cross. So happy for him. And wanted to also have KSL's consumer producer in to talk about cash and kids and how kids can save and what we can do as parents to teach our kids.
Yeah, this is something that is a common conversation in the Noriega household. In fact, sometimes my kids offer to pay for things and I'm a little embarrassed. Like we were buying sodas and my daughter starts pulling out her wallet. I'm like, honey, I got this. I will buy you a soda.
Sweet.
But it's one of those things where they're just kind of ingrained in their brain that you pay for your own stuff. And sure, has it gone too far sometimes? But I still like the idea that our kids are like, oh, I'll pay for that.
Sloan Tregg attended a kids' cash fair. So what did you learn?
Lots of things, Debbie. I think the most important thing that I learned is that it's never too early to teach your kids about money. There's a Cambridge study out of the UK saying that kids kind of form their money habits at age 7. And so when I was there, I saw kids as young as 3, you know, learning how to tell difference between nickels and dimes and quarters. And they had it set up so they can actually the spending options were much more than the earning options. So they were forced to make some choices between what they wanted and what they needed.
Now, you did an interview with Troy Rasmussen.
Mm-hmm.
Rasmussen of Mountain America Credit Union. Let's get his take on this.
And by the age of 7 or 8, many of our financial habits can actually be pretty well established. So the sooner we start, the better.
7 or 8?
Yeah.
Financial habits established. That's shocking to me. I'd never heard that statistic before.
No, and there's actually other studies. There's a study out of Purdue that says kids can grasp basic money concepts as early as 3 and 4. I mean, it's amazing how much they can learn at such an early age.
Well, I can tell you, when I was 13 years old, I was mowing a ton of lawns. And this is 1990. I earned $1,000 in the summer. That's a ton of money to a 13-year-old. And my mom told me, listen, you earned it. You worked hard for it. You spend it however you want. And I spent every cent of that $1,000.
You blew it.
And I really think I look back on it and I think some of my spendiness kind of goes back to that 13-year-old Dave where if you want something, you just buy it. You had the money, so saving it and looking toward the future was not top of my list. And I can totally believe that at a very young age, it can set the foundation for your adulthood.
Absolutely. And Tony stressed to me that the importance that we teach him as young as 7, that the difference between wants and needs, and do that kind of by showing them through examples. Give an example of a time where you had to sacrifice a want that you really wanted to buy in order to pay for a need. Maybe you wanted that HDTV, couldn't get it because you had to pay the power bill. Show them, explain that to them, and they kind of grasp that concept a lot easier.
Okay, let's hear from Tony again, and then let's get Sloan's input on this.
Setting that tone in the home can be one of the most important things, and then actually having the schools and the educational system be a support for that. But no one's going to teach your children about the things that are valuable like the parents.
Wow, because I think so often we count on the schools to do it.
Yeah, kids, they soak in this stuff. They're seeing, they're observing. They're learning from you whether you want them to or not. And so you need to set that example. And even if you have had a checkered past with money, it's not too late for you to learn.
Well, and sometimes that is the best lesson for the kids. I got scammed out of $80 trying to go to a concert yesterday or 2 days ago. Okay. And yes, Debbie, I still have not reported this. But anyway, it was a great teaching opportunity for my son who was with me. And I explained to him, yeah, Dad did a stupid thing.
Yeah, they're watching you. They know when you're throwing down plastic to pay for stuff, and they get that concept. And so you need to kind of explain to them, you know, your failures, you know, because they can learn a lot by that. You know, you bought the $80 ticket scam, you know, and your son will remember that lesson for probably the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Kids today have access to apps, as you know, Sloan, as mm-hmm. you know, we all know. But I want to hear about some of the savings apps that you've investigated. Maybe we can pass on some tips about those to our listeners so they can help their kids use them.
Yeah, gamifying money can help them kind of grasp that lesson. You don't have to be scared to learn about money.
Did you say gamifying?
Gamifying, yeah, I know.
I love it, Sloan.
I feel so modern. but one of the apps that Kiplinger recommended was Saving Spree. And this is for iOS, but kids can they make imaginary money and they can make decisions, and they can lose money by making bad decisions. Another good one that I played last night was called Renegade Buggies. It's all about shopping, and you learn how to buy in bulk, learn how to buy coupons, find the best deal. You look at the unit pricing, lots of different tips to save money. And another good one is Bankaroo, and that's for iOS and Android. And this is actually came about from the 11-year-old. What it is, it's a virtual bank, and kids can learn how to bank that money, save that money. They'll learn how to set up a budget, and they'll learn how to make those decisions, again, between wants and needs.
At 14, that is when we started our kids with their own debit card, their own account, their own savings account, and they have had a ball following the money that they save. They're like, Look at all that. It's growing. This feels great.
It's so different than how I grew up when I knew I had a savings account, but I wasn't allowed to know how little was in it. It turns out I thought I had all kinds of money and it was like $100 in it, which at the time was a lot of money. But seriously, looking back, $100 didn't go very far. But my parents really shielded me from this information. And it's a whole different way of life now in homes across America and across Utah.
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of us, myself included, have made some embarrassing money mistakes. And so maybe we're reticent to talk to our kids about money because we don't feel we're confident enough to do it. But as Tony suggested, I mean, you have to kind of build that confidence. You have to turn things around now for yourself, and it's never too late to do that. And he recommended, and this is a good idea, is to go to your credit union or to your bank because they have free education tools where you and your child can learn money lessons, and they're free.
They love free.
Yeah.
They want you to be financially stable.
Absolutely.
There's a vested interest.
Oh, absolutely.
When you borrow money, they want you to be able to pay that back regularly and in full.
Yeah.
Sloan, I know you're a regular listener of the show. You have to be because you're my friend. We're going to go around the room here real quick in the 30 seconds we have left. Biggest money mistake you ever made?
I bought a car off of KSL, a website. And the car turned out to have no mechanic worthiness. I didn't ask a mechanic to look at the car, so I paid $2,300 for the car. Then I had to pay $1,900 more to get it to work.
Oh man! That's,
and that was
I lived
huge,
that with you.
Yeah.
I lived that with you, my friend.
You remember my tears and my crying when
I know.
Slept
in
the desk.
I think
and cried.
At one point I offered you. I did. I took you back and forth to work for a
you
while.
You did.
While
yeah.
While we worked this issue out, mine was a car issue too. In the beginning, when I finally started making a little bit of money, I got sick of one car and I would trade it in and buy another and buy. You know what? You end up upside down.
Yeah.
A horrible financial decision there. And kind of got stuck with a car in the end that I didn't want anymore and I couldn't sell.
Yeah, cars are a common problem. I can't get past my $80 I lost on a scam when I knew it. When I turned to my wife and said, honey, this is totally a scam. Boom, sent. Terrible. But I think part of it, Sloan, and you said it, being able to talk about those mistakes so that hopefully someone else can learn from our terrible decisions. Thanks for joining us. We're out of here. As usual, Debbie and I leave friends.
Live breaking news now on the mobile app for KSL News Radio. Listen at home or anywhere you go. Brought to you by Any Hour Services. KSL FM Midvale. KSL Salt Lake City. KSL News Radio. This is Utah's news station.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.